Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is your moment. Your time to shine. Your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
It's 10:32 p.m. in the basement of a dive bar in Delaware, and you're listening to Night Call. Hello, and welcome back to Night Call, a call-in show for our dystopian reality. My name is Emily Yoshida. I am in Los Angeles, and with me on the other end of the line are...
Molly Lambert and...
Tess Lynch. Hello.
Hello. It is week two of Y2May. We're getting into it. We went straight to the top of the 1999 nostalgia ladder, and we're going to be talking about Fight Club later on in the episode, as well as a couple other 99 movies, I think.
We took the London Eye. Because that was built for the millennium, right? You just told me?
The thing about the London Eye, it just goes around and around in a circle, man. It's a cycle.
I love when people are like, what great civic project can we do? A giant Ferris wheel.
Like, what kind of public transportation can we undertake? You know, something to really put our money to good use. How about a thing that goes around and around and doesn't go anywhere? Yes, we are still talking about the turn of the millennium, the Y2K era, 1999, the year 2000, all of the above. And we got a night email from a listener about the turn of the millennium in a very special and very happy part of the world. So Malia writes, when I was very young at the turn of the century, there was one celebration I was the perfect age and target audience for, the Millennium Celebration at Walt Disney World Resort, especially Epcot. They added temporary exhibits for other countries to add to the World Showcase side of the park, but the wildest and most aesthetic was the Tapestry of Nations Parade, which Disney was so hype about, they literally performed it at the 2000 Super Bowl. Christina Aguilera and Enrique Iglesias were not staples of the daily park operations, unfortunately. This parade, led by the Sage of Time and set to the theme song Celebrate the Future Hand in Hand, which is full of the exact type of millennium inspiration lyrics you would imagine, featured enormous abstract puppets that all had incredible names like Disc Man, Hammer Man, Wiggle Girl, Reverse Marionette, Aztec Man, and Angel Girl. She linked us out to the song and to some resources about this parade. the Millennium Celebration. So we will share that in the links. Yeah, Epcot seems like a particularly, like a very peak millennium kind of place to be for New Year's Eve.
I'm jealous. It sounds aspirational to me to spend the Millennial Celebration in Epcot.
Yeah, I mean, Epcot seems so weird. I have never been there, but I have definitely looked into it because it's just like a permanent world's fair, mm-hmm, essentially.
Right. Well, the thing about this parade, because I did listen to the song Celebrate the Future Hand in Hand, which is just like, we're going to reach for the future. Like, it's just all this very kind of banal type stuff. And it just kind of reminds me about how, especially for stuff like Disney, I feel like Disney is sort of the peak example of this, but there's like this sort of, because it's the millennium and it's supposed to be the future also gets wrapped up in this idea of like being cool. So like Disney has to be like cool in some way for the turn of the millennium. Right, do you know what I'm talking about?
Like, right, which they are physically incapable of doing.
Yeah.
So and that's what weird I stretch. Love. That's what I love is like Disney and like, that's why I always loved Archie comics too. It's like people trying to understand youth culture who like fundamentally have a contempt for youth culture, but yeah, are like, this is what sells. Gotta sell this right now.
Well, Disney's in kind of a bind though, because they're marketing to people who are like infants to preteens, really. So it's, I mean, you have to self-censor. So there's no way to be cool if you're marketing to a group that includes, yeah, like toddlers.
And it's, you know, especially awkward at that time too, because Disney is in like a very notorious slump at the time. Mm-hmm. Disney is in their like pre-iMac phase. Like if you think of Disney and Apple as being these ascendant forces in the O's, like it's right. It's, I think it's right before they shut down their hand-drawn animation studio. They haven't had like a animated hit in a while. They're not the dominant force that they are today. And so like, it does feel very like random grab baggy, the stuff that they, like, they don't have like, it's when they're not with Pixar anymore too. So they can't use those very popular properties.
I'm just picturing, yeah, like Goofy with some cool sunglasses on.
It's totally that. It's like the Goofy movie aesthetic, which, yeah, I kind of love the Goofy
everybody
movie.
Everybody loves the Goofy movie aesthetic. I was watching a show about Who Framed Roger Rabbit that was edited, not surprisingly, because it was made by Disney, like a little misinformatively. Mm-hmm. But I was just reading a lot about kind of that era of Disney, the new, because I guess like that was also around the same time as The Little Mermaid was Roger Rabbit. But yeah, that kind of like pre getting back on track.
Yeah.
With all the, you know, pre having a lot of product to sell or being sure that product's going to sell forever. I'm really dying to watch Oliver and Company, which is the Billy Joel.
Wait, have you not seen
Oliver and
Company?
The first movie I ever saw in theaters.
Just not since, really? I saw it in theaters. I know it'll like unlock a weird part of my brain to see it again.
Oh, I have the DVD, my friend. I have the DVD.
You're a Billy Joel enthusiast.
I am. I've been listening to Keep in the Faith once a week. Got to listen to the most confound. And I watched the video for Keep in the Faith just to keep myself, you know, on solid ground here.
Well,
the grounding force.
The 80s, 50s, as epitomized by Billy Joel, also just a big part of the Epcot dream.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
That compression of the future aesthetic. That and yeah, it's such a retro futuristic aesthetic, which, as Emily was saying, we all really enjoy.
Right.
But it feels so much like corporate musicals to me.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is also funny. Not necessarily fun, but interesting.
Right.
Well, the thing this was making me, this whole kind of the vibe of the Epcot Millennial Celebration was making me think about kind of the early days of Disney California Adventure, because that opened in 2001. So, you know, kind of still in that time.
Oh, yeah.
Period.
And it was a huge bomb at the time.
But yeah, it was
really,
it really took its time. Yeah, people hated it. It was sort of like, what's the point of this thing?
Yeah, it was compared to like Euro Disney, because it was like some of the audience for these people for this place is Californians. Why would they want to go to California?
Right. Right.
Make it
because they sell
else.
Beer there. That's why. Maybe that was added later.
Yeah, that might have been what they realized was the ticket for it. But there is this ride. I mean, I didn't go to California Adventure until like this decade, this past decade. But there was an early ride on the first that was part of their like a flagship ride at California Adventure called Superstar Limo that's on the website, the excellent resource Yesterland. There's a whole record of it. And it was like a 2001 era tour through like Hollywood. Like the thing is that like you're a celebrity in it. So you're in a limo and you're like going to an award show or something and getting asked questions by Joan Rivers. And there are all these like horrifying caricatures of actual celebrities. Cause it's like, look, it's Brad Pitt or whoever. And it's like an animatronic Brad Pitt. It's like really, really strange. And it is this Disney, you know, kind of trying to be edgy or cool or hip or something in a way that I think just obviously was a flop from the get-go. Probably part of the reason that people are like, what the hell is California Adventure? Why does it exist?
Yeah, my boyfriend has told me about there was like a section of Disney World called MGM Studios that I think had a lot of the proto versions of the Hollywood rides from California Adventure.
Yeah.
But there's a ride from there that I've watched ride-throughs of that is also fucking terrifying. I believe it's called The Movie Ride. And it just takes you through a bunch of random movies, including some movies. I think maybe Alien is involved because I think it was like anything. Well, Alien's not an MGM property. I forget what
so
it is.
So it's just like the Backlot tour at Universal.
At Universal, yeah.
Their version of that.
Scarier because there's like an animatronic Wizard of Oz in it. It's like,
ooh, weird.
It's like
I have to say, the Backlot tour, though, has the backdraft. The backdraft part of that is super scary.
It's very scary. And it's also like, who thinks about backdraft now, except for in the context of the
Universal Studios tour. It overtook the movie. It's, yeah. Because it was quite an experience. Although Backdraft is a good movie.
Yeah, Backdraft rules. Yeah. I've never been on the studio tour.
Really?
Yeah.
How?
Oh, night call tour. Yeah. Oh, actually, we'll never be able to do that, probably.
Oh, I love thinking about that shark just being there by itself.
Right. Living
but
its best life.
The only time I ever went to Universal was with Tess. We went one time.
Didn't you go to, but you went to City Walk. Oh, but yeah, you just didn't go to inside
the park.
Yeah,
you didn't go in the park. The park's expensive.
So expensive. It's crazy. It's base. I mean, I think it's like almost comparable to Disneyland, but there's so much less to do.
California Adventure, to its credit, has gotten better in some ways, although they've gotten rid of the things I really liked, like Tower of Terror. But the Cars ride probably is one of the best rides in the whole park system. It's a great
Which
ride.
Which one? The bumper, the Cars themed bumper ride? Or isn't there, there's also like Mater's something or other?
No, there's like a dark ride where
Canyon ride where you're racing through the canyon. Yeah. It's outside, actually. That's part of the magic of it, is like you're actually under the blue California skies in this completely artificial canyon. It's like
that
such
was
a bizarre
the thing,
environment.
That
it's
was
great.
Like the thing my parents liked the best when I took them to California Adventure once and we had the pass was that was like, they were like, this is great. Like,
it's a magical environment. It's
great.
They
loved fake California. Yeah. I also loved fake Yosemite. I love the fake The Shining Hotel that they have there, which is just exactly a replica of The Shining Hotel. Because it's the Awani, I think, from Yosemite.
Well, we're going to take a break real quick. And when we come back, we're going to break the first rule of Fight Club and talk about Fight Club.
The Home Depot wants every mom to have their own outdoor oasis this Mother's Day. Whether that be a new space to relax or a beautiful garden upgrade, at The Home Depot, you can give mom a gift that's as unique as she is, with a stylish and comfortable place to entertain or relax for the mom who does it all. And with convenient delivery, you won't have to stress over getting it to her either. Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers for the mom who's great with gardening? Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens with the Home Depot's Mother's Day Savings Event happening now. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97, for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Start your Mother's Day shopping and saving today by checking out the Home Depot's extensive selection online at homedepot.com or directly in-store near you with convenient pickup and delivery options. See homedepot.com/delivery for details. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique two-in-one product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just two capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global. Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, "We are going to give women meaningful beauty." And I said, "That's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life."
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
And we're back. Welcome back to Night Call. This week, we allowed ourselves 1 week to talk about the movies of 1999. And of course, if we had to pick just one, we picked the 1999 David Fincher adaptation of Chuck Palahniuk's Fight Club. And I would like to know a little bit like why we came to this decision. not because I disagree with it, but like, Molly, maybe you can like talk a little bit about why this is our pick.
Molly steered the ship.
Yeah. I bullied you guys into it.
Like a real man.
Well, this is because this is our Fight Club, obviously.
True, true. Yeah.
But also, yeah, Emily made the salient point that everybody did their 1999 is the best year for movies things last year when it was the 20 year of that. So I did feel that if we were going to do one movie, we should do Fight Club. But it was, Emily, it was because you said it was the last movie where terrorism could be good.
I don't even know if this movie thinks that terrorism is good. Like, it really soft pedals near the
end. Having watched it again, I forgot how non-committal it is.
It's very not ready to commit to terrorism. I think, you know, Oklahoma City had been fairly recent. But this is truly one of the last years where if you say terrorist in a movie, you imagine a white man. Mm-hmm. It's before terrorism gets completely encoded in this whole like Homeland Security war against terror type thing, which is super interesting. And it doesn't, I don't think it necessarily lets it be cavalier about it, but it's certainly a different thing to have a movie be about or like play with than it would be 2 years later.
Well, also, if I'm not wrong, I think I read somewhere, and I'll have to double check this and put it in the notes, but I am pretty sure that this was made, Columbine happened in April of 1999.
Yep.
And so there are a bunch of lines and scenes, obviously, in Fight Club that happened, or, you know, the movie was completed before Columbine. So when test audiences were responding to these scenes, they thought they were funny. And by the time the movie was released, they didn't land, and that makes perfect sense. But it's bizarre how much the world shifted just in that brief period, and how the movie, you know, it was like being edgy. Well, it could be edgy in a certain way. And then by the time it was released, it was like, ooh, you know?
Right. I mean, it's funny. Like, I think I can't think about Fight Club really without thinking of The Matrix at the same time. And it is very largely about both the Columbine thing, because both of those films got kind of like a stink of Columbine on them,
yeah,
through
totally.
No intention of their own. But then also the way that both of those films got really, some might say, not say co-opted in the case of Fight Club, but I think definitely co-opted in the case of The Matrix by men's rights activists, that sort of, you know, all the terrible people that live on our internet now, and have always been there. And kind of, you know, the world philosophy in it is kind of molded to the ideals of these different groups. And so that makes both of these movies, even though they're like pretty, I would say both really important movies, especially for that time period, they have this sort of like bad reputation now,
mm-hmm,
because of all the stuff that's happened since.
Well, it's also so hilarious for men's rights guys to take either The Matrix or Fight Club as the like symbol of macho-ness, because both of these movies are exceptionally genderqueer, and that is why they're good. I love Fight Club. I'm a Fight Club homer. I think it's so funny. And my memory was that they were marketing it badly because nobody knew how to market it. Rupert Murdoch absolutely hated it because of the anti-corporation stance.
Right.
And they thought they would just play up the fighting part rather than the comedy. So they ran ads during UFC and WWF and stuff. And then it bombed in theaters and they blamed it on Columbine. But then it was like one of the first big movies to be a hit on DVD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was like
everybody had this on DVD.
Immediately discovered by teenagers who, mm-hmm, I think also could relate to the Columbine thing in a different way. Of like, yes, people do have a lot of suppressed rage, and like, what should we do about that?
Right. And when you're a teenager, the stuff that Edward Norton's character is frustrated with, the conformity and the corporate values and stuff like that, is just stuff that you feel like your parents are into.
Yeah.
So that's what that's what feels cathartic about it to you as a teenager. Without necessarily having the experience of being like a salary man in his early 30s or however old Edward Norton is supposed to be. It's a weird kind of jump to make, and it's weird to have that. Like, I think I asked on the Night Call Twitter specifically, I was asking about like men over 35 because I wanted to like get an idea of what somebody who at least had a little bit of a experience in the working world of the 90s, of the entire decade of the 90s, like whether or not Fight Club resonated for them.
Because, what did the micro surfs have to say?
Yeah, because like this is about, like this is at its core a story about like rejecting corporate values and like overthrowing credit card companies.
Yeah,
and
somebody
stuff.
Else sent me a message where they were like, it's the same exact plot as Office Space.
Yes, it yeah. is. Yeah. It seems like that was a big point of contention then. And I only say seems because I wasn't the age where that was relevant to me at all. But I watched those movies, of course, and like internalized the stuff that they were making fun of.
Right. And there was like the Adbusters mentality. Of yeah. like, we should be questioning these corporations. It's interesting to watch Fight Club and be like, wow, like IKEA is what they talk about as being the like fast fashion, you know, churn and burn company. But obviously now you could just like slot in Amazon and it yeah. would be more dystopian even, you know.
I think IKEA is easy though to mock, especially for visual purposes. And like, I always remember the like kind of pan across his living room where they're filling in all the IKEA items.
Oh, that's such a great
tag.
Scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very timeless. But I mean, I think about that every time I walk into an IKEA too. But IKEA has such an aesthetic. Like, it's such a, I think I get, especially like Tess, you wrote a little bit about internet cafes in the Night Call newsletter this month. And like that kind of aesthetic of just sort of like, the clean future. I guess this is a lot of stuff we were talking about last week, just like the aesthetic of this point in time being so, I guess, comparatively antiseptic to, especially to like the grunge era and everything that had been at the beginning of the decade. I don't know. It's interesting to think that like that was a time when all this fiction decided that like the design and values of the late 90s were emasculating.
But I don't think it's just emasculating. I think it's like dehumanizing to anybody, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it also kind of shows you how obsessed we were at a certain point in time with how the white man who was a white collar, white guy with angry feelings, like, what about him? Let's really focus on the issues that are confronting him. And it's, I mean, I always think of this movie as kind of an interesting companion to American Psycho, because both of them are really focus so much on kind of rejecting polite society and how wonderful it feels to like go against society, but obviously in very different ways. But when I was watching it, I hadn't seen it in so long, because I think I was at a certain point really turned off by how I remembered it. And it's so much funnier than I thought it was when I last watched it a long time ago.
Fight Club?
Yeah, Fight Club.
Yeah, Fight Club's hilarious. I think that's why it's good. I also just feel like, I was just talking about this, but like the postmodern directors, it's like this is the point where they were still making movies that were about something, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Had like a statement of purpose in some way. And then in the 2000s, it just all became twee design based, you know, just aesthetic and sort of.
Yeah. You at the same time, I get like a little bit of a dip in my stomach for all the CG shots of like going through the hair or going down the into the gas range or something like that. Because I'm like, this is the beginning of people being able to like, the camera can go anywhere with right. CGI.
Wow. And the intro where they go through the brain. And yeah,
I read also that the sex scene was done in Matrix Bullet Time.
Because they had to be completely clothed
at the same time. Yeah, just when they and were then figuring they it out it. At the same time. There were some other things too that even though it's so top of the line, I love like finding stuff like this out. The little breath when he's in the ice cave with the penguin was recycled from Titanic.
I loved that. The IMDb trivia for this is a really it's a good page.
Yeah,
man.
I think also like I saw this movie. I guess we were in high school. We were like juniors or seniors in high school. Maybe a little. Younger or older?
Sophomores or juniors?
Yeah. And I just like, I watched it by myself when I was at the, you know, my parents' house by myself. And it just completely blew my mind. And it was the first movie that then I watched every DVD commentary track for because there were like four commentary tracks on it. And they're all so good. As commentary. It just, yeah, I don't know. I can't probably disentangle it from my feelings about it. But what I'm realizing watching it now is that I think the first few times I watched it, I just completely missed the MRA angle because my tendency is to just insert myself as the narrator into any story, you know?
Sure.
So like that they were all men, like didn't really cross my mind, you know? I was like, we all need fight clubs. Everybody could use a fight club and then we turn it into eco-terrorism for the purposes of good. Like, that all checks out. So watching it again and trying to think of it as the MRA stuff, it's still just like, it's such a, it's making fun of it so much. It's such a satire about extreme masculinity and it's so unbelievably homoerotic.
Oh, yeah.
And like,
yeah.
Unafraid to sexualize Brad Pitt, you know, like I was doing jokes about how it's like a yaoi.
Well,
manga,
totally.
Which is like,
it is.
Like,
I mean, they have a meet cute on a plane and it's like very flirty. And it's like, you're the best single serving friend I've ever made. It's like, ooh, ooh, ooh.
And like brusque older man and like young neophyte. It's just,
yeah,
it's classic.
So no, it's very, it reads, I mean, it's a very easy read. It's not a stretch at all.
I don't know. Yeah, that they thought that like just the marketing was so bad that they thought women would hate this movie because they were like, women
fighting.
Would hate to see men fighting. And it's like, no, women want to see like shirtless Brad Pitt, like wrestling some other guys. Like that is totally something women want.
Yeah.
I never felt like this was like a particularly macho movie. Unlike, I will say, like a Christopher Nolan, like Batman movie, you know, that to me is like masculine and fascist and like has no sense of humor about it. This to me is about masculinity and fascism, but it's like totally has a sense of humor about both of those things.
I think the thing that happens with this movie, and I kind of experienced it myself when you get into the movie second half, like I think this movie is a little too long, and I think it does suffer from the thing of like people remember the first half of this movie and they don't remember the second half. They remember all the cool stuff where they start the fight club and Brad Pitt is cool and they're friends and they're living in a nasty house because men like nasty houses. And then they don't remember the part where they start a terrorism cell and the dudes are all like these brainwashed idiots. Like they don't remember the part where it's like, oh, okay, this is why this idea is ultimately kind of silly in execution when you tie it to the idea of masculinity. Well, like I'm not saying that the idea of fucking over credit card companies through any means, take your pick, is necessarily a bad thing. But I'm saying that like when it's tied to like this notion of we're doing this to like reclaim our place in the world as men, and that then like consumerism is necessarily feminine and feminizing, then that's the thing that I think this movie is still making fun of and is very like aware of, but I just don't think people remember that part of the movie.
No, and I think that like any kind of, I think you're right, and that also just happens with any kind of like masculine college movie. Like people don't remember the second half of Scarface.
Right.
They don't remember the second half of Wolf of Wall Street. Like everybody
goes
remembers.
On and on and on. Yeah.
Yeah, and all those movies that tend to be 3 hours long. Maybe people don't always watch them all the way to the end.
Is this a case for shorter movies? Finally, a really good case for shorter movies.
I was shocked at how long it was because I didn't remember the third act at all, really. I clearly have smoked so much pot in my days that I just like erased Fight Club to save room or something. But yeah, I mean, Project Mayhem and that whole third act, I was like, I guess this is a movie that most people, including myself, upon rewatch, you start it and then 2 hours in, you're like, I'm good.
Yeah.
Now I remember it. Now I'm good.
I feel like it was the perfect, like, you know, also just reading about like what could have been and who could have been in it and who might have directed it instead, like that Fincher and Danny Boyle like might have swapped on this and the beach at some point.
Oh, yeah.
It's like an interesting alternate universe. But I do just feel like the fact that it ended up being a David Fincher movie is what made it work so well, because he has this background from commercials and music videos where it's like he knows how to sell objects with a camera. He's like at the all-time genius of being able to do that and also do it in a way where you're critiquing it at the same time.
Yeah.
And the fact that, did he make Zodiac next after this?
No, he did Panic Room after this.
Oh, right. Panic Room, which he said he didn't want as many setups is why he made Panic Room, because he like got undone by his own ambitiousness.
This movie looks so expensive. Like, right,
it is so expensive. But it's also like, what would, you know, there's something in the commentary where he talks about, because the buildings they blow up at the end are actually the Century City Fox buildings.
Because they were afraid they'd get
in trouble if they blew up the real LA skyline. The people who owned the rights to those buildings would get mad.
But the agencies didn't care.
Right. Well, they were like, we own these buildings. And David Fincher says something like, who hasn't dreamed about like blowing up these buildings in Century City when they're empty, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, that's kind of what's so much fun about revisiting Fight Club, too, is looking back at all of these anecdotes. Like, I think another one was how David Fincher, in the quote from the IMDb trivia, is the original pillow talk scene had Marla saying, "I want to have your abortion." When this was objected to by a Fox 2000 Pictures president of production, Laura Ziskin, David Fincher said he would change it. If she would promise that the line wouldn't be cut. Ziskin agreed, and Fincher wrote the replacement line, "I haven't been fucked like that since grade school." Then they had to keep that in because that was the deal. So there's so much of the kind of, this is like an anti-corporate movie and you're dealing with all of these corporate forces and you have to just like kind of stand up for what you can, I guess.
And I don't think we've like moved that far from the angry white guy movie, because like Joker got nominated for Oscars this year.
Oh yeah, totally.
Like, you know, obviously, I was just saying, like, I would have loved to see what other people of Gen X, like, had to say about this, besides just a bunch of dudes.
It's just so crazy that Joker was lauded at all for basically making many of the same points that Fight Club made, but like with no sense of humor.
Well, like first is tragedy, then is farce. Well, that's like Joker is like a Fight Club poster that has never seen the movie. It's like,
but Molly, you still haven't seen Joker, right?
No, but I feel like it's the same. It had a similar thing where it's like the people who saw the movie were like, this isn't actually going to inspire copycats. But the like wave of hysteria over copycats, because there was a big wave of hysteria about Fight Club 2, that it was going to like inspire young men to violence. And some people did start some Fight Clubs. Somebody sent us a really good Twitter message saying that they owned the website fightclub.org. And they were going to turn it into a Tinder where you could do Fight Clubs, where you could meet people to fight them. But that their friends are like, don't do that because of liabilities.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that, please. It's so stressful to hear.
It does remind me of that time, just of the millennium being sort of a hinging time between early internet and, you know, modern internet, where it was still like, how far will this go? Would people meet up randomly with strangers to fight them because it's a possibility of something you can do now?
Yeah, and we also got a call from a listener who also got inspired to start their own Fight Club, which we're going to listen to after the break.
The Home Depot wants every mom to have their own outdoor oasis this Mother's Day. Whether that be a new space to relax or a beautiful garden upgrade, at The Home Depot, you can give mom a gift that's as unique as she is, with a stylish and comfortable place to entertain or relax for the mom who does it all. And with convenient delivery, you won't have to stress over getting it to her either. Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers for the mom who's great with gardening? Let mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens with the Home Depot's Mother's Day Savings Event happening now. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97, for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Start your Mother's Day shopping and saving today by checking out the Home Depot's extensive selection online at homedepot.com or directly in-store near you with convenient pickup and delivery options. See homedepot.com/delivery for details. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, we are going to give women meaningful beauty. And I said, that's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life.
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Hello, Night Call. This is Ted from Detroit. Long time, first time. I actually have a twofer for today. I'm a man over 35 with a Fight Club story, and I have a bizarre Y2K story. So me and my friends saw Fight Club in the theaters. We were about 16 years old, and we snuck in, and I'm actually very ashamed to say that we were so blown away by it that we started our own Fight Club, but thankfully that was short-lived. I know that it was originally intended as a satire, but it's, from my point of view, every dude in my high school got a very different message from that film. And I can really only see it now as this, I can only see it through my original eyes, which was this kind of proto-incel message with Edward Norton, his character being a kind of socially isolated but very aggro, shy dude who just dreams and dreams of getting his own violent revenge on everyone in his life. For my Y2K story, I went to a concert at the Pontiac Silverdome where Metallica, Kid Rock, and Ted Nugent played. And Pamela Anderson was there and was on stage and did the countdown for the ball drop on December 31st, 1999. So I spent my Y2K at the Pontiac Silverdome. I didn't even like the music, but I had to go to because all my friends were going. And it was a terrible concert because the Silver Dome was an awful venue. So love the show. Keep going. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for that call. We're going to talk a little more Pam Anderson next week. So let's like table that half of it for right now. But that's like the most incredible. Oh,
that sounds perfect.
That sounds incredible.
Sounds like a dream Y2K.
Yeah.
Yep.
We'll dig more into it next week. But let's talk starting your own Fight Club in high school. I mean, I think that he's totally right. I think teenage boys did, no matter how much we can appreciate the satire and the condemnation of a lot of things that Fincher's doing, teen boys are kind of dumb. Like, and they were the primary target for this movie. I don't know.
I don't think they were the primary target for this movie because I feel like we were the primary target for this movie. You know, like.
But I don't see it in theaters. I saw it on DVD. I'll tell you, I saw it on DVD at a sleepover, a co-ed sleepover.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like this is a co-ed sleepover.
We
movie.
Were waiting for, we were going to go wait in line early the next morning to see, to see the X-Men movie. So this was the year 2000, and we were just like watching movies all night to like get amped, and Fight Club was one of them. And I thought it was like, you know, very edgy and mind blowing. I will say though, I want to shift briefly to talk about the woman, the single woman of
Marla.
Fight Club, Marla, who like truly that was the bigger thing that I. Was the bigger impression left on me as a 14-year-old, I guess, what I saw.
As a goth girl?
Yeah, because I was just like, oh, that's that's who I want to be when I grow up.
Whoa, Emily.
I don't know. It was just the grunge aesthetic, the like thrift store dress and shit, and wearing big hats and sunglasses. I just thought it was cool, and I liked how she was such a pill. I liked like she was just so annoying. I wanted the guts to be annoying like Marla, and I don't think I ever truly got them, but. I was watching this. Yeah, you know, it had been a while since I'd seen it. And she was always like a very big style icon for me. But I did think it was funny how I actually have like more of a wardrobe that mirrors Brad Pitt's now than hers.
Incredible style in this movie.
Oh, yeah, my God.
Well, I think it's also like if you saw this movie and you were a teenager, any movie that reinforced the idea that like the adult world was bullshit and you already are finding out about it without even having to experience it. hit, a super hit with the kids always.
Well, there's also that feeling. I mean, we were, like you said, we were either sophomores or juniors. We were, it's the idea of like being put under so much pressure to achieve something that you're told that you want, you know, without really understanding how that fits in with what you want for yourself. I mean, that's why it appeals.
It's such a late 90s movie, but like what it's about is really like a 50s anxiety about just like the man in the gray flannel suit stuff, that you're like just a cog in a machine and, you know, you're not a real person because work has turned you into this other thing. Now watching it, I'm like, wow. Imagine being so dissatisfied about having a stable, high-paying job. That aspect of it, and The Matrix too, is interesting because it is like, well, now there's like a much lower rung than that, you know?
Yeah, it truly makes the 90s feel like salad days. Like, yeah,
which is funny.
People were complaining about having like healthcare.
Right, or just complaining about having like too many choices, which is, you know, is like we do have way too many choices. I think I was also just like full space communist at that point in my life. I was like, yes, like restart the banks from zero. Everybody gets $20. The end. We never have money again. Cool.
I think this movie, The Matrix.
I'm kind of like that again now, actually. I should watch The Matrix.
Oh, yeah. Oh, always. The Matrix is so good. Like, I think that people, I think that it's always worth a rewatch, especially because it's been so tarnished by the culture and the discourse. Like, it's worth a rewatch to remember that The Matrix is actually incredible.
Yeah, I feel like we've gotten so off track. You know, even though people hate corporations, it's like there's this thing now where people hate them and also use them because they are so octopus-like. You have no choice in a lot of scenarios. But what? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we just feel so powerless. It's like, what can we do?
Yeah.
Besides fight.
I fight. Yeah. I was going to say, I think that like this movie, The Matrix, and another 1999 movie I watched this past week, Magnolia, are very interesting snapshot of masculinity in movies in 1999, the turn of the millennium. And really, like, just really interesting to see the seeds for all the stuff that we're dealing with kind of like germinating around then, but it feels like so long ago. But obviously the whole Frank T.J. Mackey plot line of Magnolia is like kind of this almost like tragic parody of being a men's rights guy, being like a pickup artist, that kind of person who like this is all like the game, pre-mystery and all that. Like that this is still kind of a lot of what that film is about. But like in general, Magnolia is a movie about how men are pieces of shit. Mm-hmm. Like that's the running theme of the movie, is that like men ruin everybody's lives. And it was an interesting kind of semi back-to-back watch, because I watched both of these movies within a couple days of each other and I felt them in conversation.
It's funny because again, I'm just like, I saw these movies and just framed them entirely around my own like sexual pleasure instead of whatever else was going on. I was just like, I like to see Tom Cruise be like a greasy.
Wait, do you think he's hot in Magnolia?
Oh, yeah. Like only in Magnolia.
I have never found Tom Cruise sexy ever.
And Risky Business. Have you seen Risky Business?
Oh, yeah. Risky Business, maybe. But there's something a little off. There, you can always tell. You're like, something about
you. But that's why I like
him. You're a future cult member.
Well, that's why he's interesting as this character, though. Because like I think it's implied in the film that he like doesn't really have that much sex.
No, like, and that's the thing. It's like he's hot. He's hot because it's a good performance. You know, he's a good actor and he really throws himself into it. And it uses the Tom Cruise energy for something sinister.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, it's like this movie and Collateral are the only real Tom Cruise performances that I think use him correctly.
Right. And he like did a few of those and then he went back into making action movies. But just to like see a glimpse of like, you know, the weird 70s actor Tom Cruise that does exist inside Top Gun Tom Cruise is what makes that movie good to me. I also think about Fight Club. Just, I don't know, like it's homoerotic because they're wrestling, but also just watching it this time, I was like, this movie could also just be about cruising. You know,
Right.
Well, I think that the other homoerotic element is how jealous the narrator is when Tyler Durden starts having sex with Marla and he becomes like obsessed with it. Not only because she's taken yet again something that he wants just for himself, but he's obviously, it threatens his connection. I think that that kind of makes the homoeroticism stand out even more because it just does feel like a weird kind of love triangle.
Well, it's also about having a secret life.
Yeah. And it's also what makes this movie better and more insightful than something like Joker, because it is about like wanting and needing people, even if in this case, sorry if you haven't seen Fight Club yet, but like they are one and the same person. But like it's still this thing of like, I want to be a part of something. Like his loneliness is the, I would say, the biggest problem for
his loneliness is killing him.
Yes.
Well, it's also, that's why watching Fight Club has been so, it is interesting now, is like the, in the beginning of the movie when he's going to these support groups just to like cry and hug people.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, great timing for the quarantine.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like the message is modern society is alienating. And now we're looking at it from a point of view of like, oh, you don't even know how much more alienating it will get with 20 more years of this.
But do you think, I was thinking about this because I remember watching this as a teen and feeling like it was sending up the notion of support groups altogether. That like, this isn't actually what this character needs. He doesn't need to cry into Meatloaf's boobs. Like he needs to like be a man and get dirty and break his face and stuff. And that is still, I think, like there is sort of a parodic feeling to the support groups that I think wouldn't necessarily be there now. I think if you made this movie now, because I think that stuff is kind of taken more seriously now, but it's seen as like kind of fake or something in the film.
Well, I think, I mean, I actually really do. I agree with that. But I think that there's also this idea that we can't, you can't like touch or physically engage with people without permission. And that support groups do have this kind of like cheesy but necessary way of forcing people to do things that you would think would happen organically more often than they do. Mm-hmm. And it's still, I mean, support groups are still kind of fascinating to me and were fascinating to me in the 90s too, just in terms of like it. They do fulfill a need, not just for people who are, you know, who alcoholics or whatever, but like just people who are isolated and lonely and need to kind of have a space created just to connect. Mm-hmm. And it did back when I first saw it, it definitely did seem very kind of like cruelly poking fun. But
yeah.
Rewatching it, it's not as cruel as I remember. Like you can kind of feel that it's like there's a little bit of genuine empathy for people that I felt like maybe I didn't read the first time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think part of that is just like we're adults now too. And we probably know people who have gone to one of these groups, whether it's like AA or something like that. Like we know that real people use this and need this, and sometimes it can really help people. But when you're a teenager and you're watching it, you're like, look at all the sad adults who are failures crying in each other's arms. And it makes you like resent that, I think, if you're a certain kind of
See, I thought young you were person. Just supposed to think that he was a dick for like barging in on the meetings where he didn't belong.
No, because he was genuinely emoting.
He was
an imposter and he didn't want to be outed as an imposter. But then, you know, after Meatloaf kind of joins him in Fight Club, like you see that they were, you know, maybe more imposters than one might have guessed.
Well, it's sort of this idea of like the only thing lamer than going to a support group and like relying on other people is like pretending to go to a support group or something. Like that kind of like that's what it feels like. Because it's just like, it's like it's the only way he can deal with his insomnia and his own kind of mental instability at the time. And it's like all, you know, and I think that the movie is saying that like, these aren't weaknesses. These are all symptoms of like how fucked up society is. But like, if you treat them as weaknesses and you treat them as something that needs to get beat out of you, then you're gonna, you know, have a problem on your hands.
Yeah.
Should we take another night call?
Let's take another night call.
Hello, I am a 43-year-old white man, and I like Fight Club. And I'm not embarrassed to say it, but not in the same way that some people are really not embarrassed to say it. I think there's some good nuggets of Taoism in there. at the time that I saw it, of course, when it came out, I was younger, and it really made a point. Things like you're not your wallet, you're not your checking account, just the whole of rejection of materialism really spoke to me. And then I think it kind of took on a life of its own, and I like to compare it to, you know, Nirvana, when Kurt Cobain would complain about the jocks and all these people getting into the music that was never his intention. You know, I know Chuck Palahniuk's not great and doesn't have the best track record, but I think he has a voice, and it speaks to people who live on the edges. And I took it more as a self-improvement through looking at what masculinity really means, and not how it took off to be this embrace of toxic masculinity and raw violence. The violence is a symptom. It's not the prescription. Anyway, that's a 43-year-old man's thoughts on Fight Club. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much for that night call. We really liked that. Well put.
Yeah. I think that the kind of Taoist stuff in it and the non-materialism, that's the stuff that's almost most frustrating to me, because I'm just like, why isn't this what took off? Like, why? No,
totally.
like that should be the, that should have, if that became a cult thing that all these dudes got into and they were at an impressionable age, like, why didn't that hang on? Like,
for sure. And that's one of the things that was the most frustrating about the 2000s after that, was then things got like hyper materialistic across all media. And we made a bunch of famous people of, you know, just rich people. It went so far in the other direction.
Does this feel like a case of, I mean, and we all, like, I think we're all big David Fincher fans and we like him as a director. But does this just feel like a kind of thing where you can't have a glossy Brad Pitt starring Fox Studios movie about anti-consumerism? Like, it just doesn't work because it's automatic, especially like directed, as you're saying, Molly, by a commercial director, by a music video director. It's all going to look glamorous and cool and like a product.
No, because I think that can exist and fly over the head of the audience. I have also talked about Josie and the Pussycats as a great Y2K movie that satirizes consumerism, but in a way where it would also be easy to think it was endorsing it if you were not very smart. I think that's just a hazard. Again, it's like nobody would say that The Wolf of Wall Street is endorsing insider trading, but that was what a lot of people took from it. I think people are just afraid of the chaotic energy of teenage boys at every time in history, because this movie got compared to Clockwork Orange a lot.
Yeah, they were afraid that it was going to have the same effect.
Yeah. And it must be cool to have so much power that people are that afraid of you. We didn't know what that was like at all as teenage girls.
Well, we had the craft. If we only achieved magical powers,
actually,
then.
I read that Marla, Helena Bonham Carter, based her performance on Judy Garland at the end of her life.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Which makes perfect sense. And I was doing a lot of jokes about how Judy is the Joker for women, because it's like about a Joker, but instead of like turning it on society, it's just like into yourself. You just like fuck yourself up. And, you know, I do think there's a lot of room for stuff about that. And whenever there is something like that, like Black Swan, that's about like, how does female rage work?
Yeah.
I'm always super into it. But I also love all the male rage movies, because again, I just think they're about me. I'm always like, yeah,
I identify
with Tony Soprano, you know?
There's a, like, I think it's possible to identify with those characters, but I also think, like, I'm always down for movies about men if they are in critique of all this stuff. Like, I don't think, like, the solution to all of these problems that we're talking about that have really kind of turned super toxic over the last couple decades, I don't think that the answer is don't talk about masculinity talk about like white male problems, because I think that like the less that you address them and the less you let art kind of like address them and root out stuff out of them, then I think like it's not going to go away. Like,
yeah. And I really liked Vice Principals on HBO. I thought that was like the best show that sort of summed up the moment of white male rage that we're in currently.
Yeah.
Without kind of like looking away at how uncomfortable that is to think mm-hmm. about or endorsing it. Because I also think that that happened with Danny McBride with Eastbound and Down, that a lot of people were just like, Kenny Powers rules. Like, this is in no way an indictment of like Southern white masculinity.
Yeah.
It's just an endorsement because it's on television, mm-hmm. you know? And so I feel like with the Vice Principals, they were like, we're going to double down on like, you do not like these people. They are not good people.
Yeah. And I also think at a certain point, it's like, and it sucks, but it's like, truly, we can't go down the path of like having art be an instruction manual for how to do life. Yeah. Like, if people take the wrong message from Fight Club or Eastbound and Down or anything else, I don't think that invalidates it as a work. Just because people are fucking stupid.
Yeah. Like, and I think Fincher, you know, like The Social Network doesn't valorize Mark Zuckerberg at all. No. You know,
yeah.
I think
that's that just movie, casting though.
Yeah, but I feel like that movie and this movie are definitely in conversation because that movie is like, what about a totally different type of toxic masculinity yeah. that makes the type of toxic masculinity in Fight Club seem really wholesome in comparison?
Totally.
Well, it also seems like kind of an evolution from it's if Fight Club is the starting place, then maybe you end up kind of, you know, yeah. by isolating yourself so much from that culture, you turn up with some other kind of toxic.
Yeah, I think
yuckiness.
The message of both is like, if you let it fester unchecked, it's gonna take over.
Yeah, and destroy your male bonding with your best friend slash.
That's why we all love Zodiac the most, though, because that's a movie about like male tenderness. Like everybody. is like that was also a movie about just like people trying to connect with each other and they just can't because they're all siloed off.
Yeah.
And now we're all literally siloed off. So
we could all use a good fight.
Could all use a good Fight Club.
Have either of you guys ever boxed or fought or anything out of curiosity?
No, I like slapped somebody once in junior high.
Slap fight.
Yeah. I've had some slap fights. You didn't do wrestling, Molly, when
oh,
in
I did
high school.
Wrestling.
I did some wrestling in high
junior
school.
High.
I did like a boxing class. Mm-hmm. But it's not, I worry too much.
I've never been in a real fist fight, yeah. but I definitely remember as a teenager, especially being like, I wish girls would work their conflicts out physically.
Me
like
too. I had to say, you know? I always wanted to get into fights with people.
Yeah.
I was not an aggressive person physically. I just wanted it to happen.
Like, yeah, just because like mental warfare is so much worse.
Yes. Yeah.
Girl-based mental warfare yeah. is like truly hell on earth. So it always seemed like, yeah, just punch it out. Everybody hugs and goes home.
Yeah. Well, when all this is over, I was truly gonna get back into boxing like last month, and then that was like the first thing that I realized was going to be closed was the boxing gym. So.
Boxing will never. Do you think that two people will ever be able to like
sweat on each
fight?
Other?
Yeah, sweat and the spit and like
they
just
announced that they're trying to reopen the NFL for the fall, speaking of fight clubs, which mm-hmm. seems like a very bad idea. Also like they're just using it to pump up the brand so they can get advertising, and then if it doesn't happen, it's like not on them.
The answer of if people are ever gonna fight each other and like get spit and punch each other is yes, well, we have a vaccine. Like, of course, I can't wait. Like, I have to say, like, this is a brief sidebar about coronavirus stuff. Like, right now, my stance is just, like, I refuse to be, like, I'm never going to go to anybody's house ever again or something. Because it's just, like, we will, like, when we have a vaccine, I'm going to be going to so many people's houses. Oh, my God. You have no idea. I'm going to show up unannounced. Like, I'm going to lick all your plates. It's going to be amazing. Like, I get too depressed if I think about a future in which even with a vaccine, because of all of this, like, I don't want to do the things that I used to do. Not that sure. I used to lick anybody's plates.
No, but I think we're also just like, stop making people feel like this will all be fine by the fall. Cause like, we don't know. Nobody
yeah.
knows for
sure.
sure.
Yeah.
And if there's a second wave in the fall, I think because people are dumb, they just want it to open all back up once and for good, you know?
Well, look, some of the people are dumb, but I also, like, there are many, many horrible, dumb people. But then I think there are also reasonable people who just don't know what to do. And they're just really anxious. I'm not one of those people.
No, I think we're getting
to wait it out, I guess. But
there's misinformation. And also, it's like they don't want to say anything definitive in case that turns out to be wrong. You know, like it seems like people can gather outside, but if they say everyone can gather outside and then a bunch of people get sick and they're like, whoops, that would also be bad. So I feel like they're erring way too far on the side of just like not giving enough guidance. And so people are interpreting it in a lot of different ways. Like people are definitely interpreting the guidance like Talmudically because it's confusing.
Yeah.
But the newest information seems to say that the real hazard is congregating indoors in groups. So
yeah.
It feels like if they did just come out and say, like, you can go to the park, just don't have a dinner party, that would, like, clear it up for a lot of people. But again, they don't want to say that because we don't know that for sure about dinner parties.
Yeah. Also, so that just says to me that in the future that there will be fight clubs, but they'll just be in parks and beaches.
Oh, it's like an outdoor fight club?
Then it will be
fine.
Beach fight club. Yeah. Beach fight club.
That sounds good.
Very modern. should we take one last quick, more of a statement than a question call before we wrap
sure,
it up?
Sure.
Okay.
Hi, this is Curtis from Iowa. I'm a man over 35 and I love Fight Club. I really like the part where Jordan Catalano gets beat up. I was always much more of a Brian Krakow guy. Thanks.
Such a good note on which to end.
Also, shout out to the 319 area code. Yeah, thanks for calling in. I totally forgot that Jared Leto was in this movie. That completely escaped my
memory. He wants to destroy something beautiful. Come on, who doesn't love
it? I love to see Jared Leto.
Seeing Jared Leto get punched in the face, just as satisfying as seeing a bunch of credit card buildings get blown up.
is Jared Leto's face the credit card buildings of actors?
This was right at the point when Jared Leto had like segued to rock star. Is that true? I think
it's right about there. And it's funny because he's standing behind Brad Pitt when he's giving the speech about how you won't be rock stars. Like,
yeah, everybody was like, really, really coming down hard on Mr. Leto for his involvement with 30 Seconds to Mars.
I'm going to say Jordan Catalano and Brian Krakow both have their problems.
I never watched that show, so I don't know. Oh my
gosh, Wait a second. Excuse me, Emily.
You have to watch it sometime. We'll do a 90s month sometime.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's a really good show.
I'm sure it is. I was too young for it when it was on.
Yeah. I'm just surprised you haven't seen it since then because it's available. Yeah. Brian Krakow's the nice guy, so he's got nice guy problems.
He's got
nice
stressful energy, though, I have to say.
Yeah. Who, Krakow?
Yeah, Krakow's really... speaking of, like, proto-incel, there's a vibe with Krakow,
he's got
like
a real
he's gonna snap.
Proto-incel, like Mark Zuckerberg, like, I feel entitled to female attention even though I don't look like Brad Pitt in Fight Club.
Exactly. But that said, it's also easy. Even I identified slightly with Brian Krakow. I mean, a lot of multidimensional characters who aren't Jordan Catalano.
I love it because it's like he understands that like Angela is his intellectual equal, but she likes Jared Leto because he's hot and they're 14.
Okay, guys. Sorry. let's save it for 90s continued. Month or 90s week or whatever.
We're just saying you'll understand. Yeah. You'll understand why you want to see him bleed.
I want to see him bleed without my so-called life. It's fine. I mean, and I mean that in a nice way. I don't wish just any actual physical violence to
fake
come
blood,
to
fake me. Blood.
Okay, that does it for us this week. Thanks for listening to Night Call. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts if you haven't already. You can follow us on social media, Twitter at Night Call Pod, Instagram and Facebook at Night Call Podcast. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/nightcall, where we have a newsletter, bonus episodes, merch, all sorts of fun stuff. And we will be back next week with another Y2 May episode. Give us a night call at 1-240-46-NIGHT if you have any millennium specific questions, comments, or concerns. And we'll all see you next week.
See you at Fight Club.
Fight Club.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com. /compatibility.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.